I'm excited this morning as we wrap up our Immersed series and what God has in store for us, I think will be a joy to all of us. I want to catch those of you who are just gathering today going, hey, what's this conversation been like? I want to catch everybody up to speed. About a month ago, we set into looking at these difficult statements that Jesus makes in his lifetime where he calls people to the immersed life. And he calls people into saying things like, you ought to be baptized. You ought to die to yourself. You ought to find yourself being buried with Christ and raised with Christ. And you ought to consider this lifestyle daily. He has a story where he tells a rich man to go sell all of your possessions and follow me. And if you remember last week, he gives us this charge. Jesus, when all authority in heaven and on earth was given to him and placed upon him, he said, go and make disciples. And you make disciples by baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then he says, and go teaching them everything that I have commanded you. Meaning, look at the statements of Jesus and live among those. And his promise was he would be with us always, that he would always make a way for this great charge that he had placed upon the disciples and the church, that it would reach the nations. And last week I said that seems like a daunting task until you actually start taking Jesus up on his words. And as we've been looking at these tough statements, we've then been saying, well, what did the disciples do with these tough statements? And what we find is that they took them seriously. They took Jesus at his words and they actually followed him and they walked in the immersed life. And so we said, well, if the disciples did this, then how did the churches respond? And so we've been looking at the early letters. Well, today we get to be one of those church letters. Because Madison Park takes serious Jesus' statements to die to self and to be resurrected with Christ and to live out of a resurrected identity and to go make disciples. And disciple making doesn't just happen here in our little bubble or in the community of Quincy, but it is promised to reach the nations. And this church invests in many mission partners, but Tyler is one of those that we invest in. And they don't let him and I in the same proximity for very long periods of time regularly. But when they do, crazy stupid happens and the Lord seems to somehow just clean it up and use it for his good. So this morning, I expect some crazy to happen as we bring Tyler Nobis all the way from Sojourn Ministries, one of our partners.
I'm excited to be here. Grew up here at Madison Park. This is my favorite place to come back to and get to preach at. So anytime they say I can do that, I jump at the opportunity. A lot has changed for me. If you guys know, I just adopted two kids from Ukraine. So one's 17, one is 13. There should be a picture up here of those, at least three good-looking people. The smoking hot woman is my wife, Lauren, and so she can't be here, but I'm excited for you guys to meet them. And Demay, you guys have blessed my family, and so I'm so excited that you guys have been a part of that. It's crazy because I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, man, Tyler, that's awesome that you have started easily into this parenting thing by adopting two kids that are 17 and 13, also that didn't speak much English and from a different country. And so we are easing our way into this whole parenting thing as we try to figure it out. We also bought a house about like 4 years ago in New England, in Rhode Island, and it's like 130 years old or something, and so it's this crazy old house, and below it is an apartment that is a three-bedroom apartment. It's actually a pretty big that actually pays for our house, and so went down there when we moved in. It's an empty apartment when we get there, and I'm just kind of scoping it out, and I noticed that there are some mouse droppings along the wall, and that's very common, obviously, if you own an old house, and so I do what everyone else would do. I'd get some mouse traps. I'm going to fix this problem myself. And so I line these traps up. And sure enough, one day I go down there to check on these traps. And the trap that I had set up strategically in the corner is no longer there. And so naturally, as a rational husband, like so many of you, I went upstairs and I blamed my wife. I was like, why are you moving the traps that I've set out? I put them there for a reason. We're trying to catch these mouse. You can't quit messing up my plan. And her being the loving wife that she is, she went downstairs to try to prove me wrong. And so I'm standing where the mouse trap is supposed to be, and I'm just like, what happened? I put it right here. It's no longer here. And I'm kind of getting angry as my wife's kind of wandering around the apartment trying to figure out what happened. And I keep telling her, I was like, I don't know why you're looking anywhere else. I know where I put it. I put it right here. What happened? She's looking in the most ridiculous places, I think. You don't know where you're looking for your keys, and you're like, look in the refrigerator. Like, I feel like that's what she's doing. She's looking ridiculously. This is nowhere else. And across the apartment, the other complete other side, in a different room in the very back corner, I hear this scream. And so I was like, what's happening? And so I'm going to show you a picture, but before I show you, I just want to warn you. You can't get mad. I warned you. It's not pleasant. This is what was happening in my mousetrap that I find. Exactly. So I see this thing, and I'm like, what is that? Okay, what happened that there is it's probably like a 3-foot snake in my house. And you may be thinking, Tyler, it's 3 feet. It's too big for my house, okay? Any snake in there, I'm not happy about. I'm freaking out. And I just keep thinking, like, what happened? What are we going to do? And me and my wife have this fight about, like, you pick it up. No, you pick it up. And so we're trying to figure this out. What had happened, obviously, is that the snake went for the whatever's in the trap. I don't know why I put it in there. The head got snapped, and then this thing literally just flailed all the way over the entire apartment into the back corner of this thing. It was big enough to pick up this trap, and I didn't actually see that. If I saw the snake literally just do, I would have died. Just straight up. But it happened, and I was freaking out. All I could think about was, what are we going to do? What happened? Like, well, why is this happening to us? Naturally, called the people, come fix this. I don't care what time it is. Like, oh, you're closed. Who cares? There's a snake in my house. And I'll tell you that story because that naturally, I wanted to know what happened. And that question, what happened here, is, I think, a profound question. We're going to talk about it today. It actually reminds me of what the Israelites did. It was an ancient tradition that they did, and also other tribes outside of even Israel, did this ancient tradition to pose the question, what happened here? And we're going to read about this tradition in the book first in Genesis 28. This is what it says. In Genesis 28, verse 11, says this. When Jacob reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he had put under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you were lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. The peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. And I am with you and watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And when Jacob woke from his sleep, he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? There is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone that he had placed under his head, and he set it up as a pillar and poured oil on the top of it, and he called that place Bethel. Now, it's a foundational story, okay, if you know, he's a patriarch, one of the early patriarchs of our faith, of the Jewish people. He has this amazing experience with God. It was a supernatural, and what he does, to commemorate what happened, he ends up taking a rock, and he ends up placing it under his head, and he places it as a memorial, as a reminder of what God did. It's a reminder of the promises that God is going to do what he says he's going to do, and he wants to remember it. It's a thing of the past, and when he looks at that, he's going to say, man, I remember that moment. It's a supernatural moment that God is going to do something awesome in the future. We have a very similar story in the book of Joshua, if you want to turn there. Joshua 4, it's going to be on the screen. God's people are about to enter this land that it talks about in Genesis, that this land that he's promised, they're finally going to enter it, but they have to cross the Jordan River to get over to it. And God does an amazing miracle, just like when he crossed the Red Sea, if you remember that story in Exodus. They have this same story here in Joshua, where God stops the water from flowing in this river so the Israelites can cross over on dry ground. Okay, and so about to cross over to this promised land. And it says this in verse 1. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you will stay tonight. Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one of each tribe, and said, go over before the ark of the Lord your God in the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. And I love this story once again because they had just crossed this river. And I'm sure it was super scary, right? They're going to cross on dry ground. But at any moment, if God lets that river continue to flow, they're all dead. Okay, so I'm sure as they're walking over this river, they're kind of freaked out. And they finally get to the other side. And God says, oh, by the way, I need you to send 12 more back to the middle of the river, and I want you to find some rocks, okay? So these people go back, and they're trying to find these 12 rocks in order to stack, in order to make what they're going to call a standing stone. Now, these stones are going to be a memorial, a reminder of what God is going to do with his people. It is going to be a place where they will see and they will remember, oh, this is where God did this. It's going to be supernatural. It's going to be different. It's going to be something they've never experienced before. And I love in this story, it even says this, that when the kids see it, they're going to say, what happened here? Tell me the story. We heard bedtime stories as kids, right? I'm sure the kids of Israel are like, tell me the story of the stack of rocks outside. And the elders of the tribe would say, man, you'll never believe what God did in this moment. It's going to be way different, and not only the Israelites, other tribes did this. All across Israel, there would be these standing stones that would point to a time where God showed up. It's interesting because archaeologists have dug up these stones, a lot of these, and some are huge. Some are like stories high. Some are stories deep into the ground. Some are one pillar of a stone, and some are lots of stones. But they all represent the same thing. They all represent a time where someone stopped and said, what happened here? I love this story because if you flip over to the New Testament in 1 Peter, there's going to be some imagery about stones that Peter talks about. Peter, one of the leaders of the early church, the people are trying to figure out, well, how do I respond to this immersed life that we're talking about, right? His church is like, what do we do? What's it look like to live for Jesus? And Peter talks about stones. And I guarantee the Israelites would have been remembering these stones that they grew up on looking at, these memorials that they talked about what God has done and what he's promised. It says this in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. It says this, as you come to him, the living stone, to Jesus, rejected by humans but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house. He calls them stones. He says, you guys are not stones of the past that point to the past. You are living stones that are going to point to what God's going to do in the future. That together, your stones, you're not going to be represented by a building. People aren't going to come to Broadway and see a church and say, wow, what happened here? They're going to see a group of people, living stones, living in such an ordinary life that they're going to say, wow, what happened here? And this is going to be a community like none other. It's going to be symbolized by something supernatural, just like the stones of the Old Testament, something that's different. Us being together, we're going to live in such a way that's going to pose people to think, man, this is not normal. This is weird. This isn't the way humans interact. When people see this, they will ask that question. And I'm not saying they'll ask that question like when we go back to your high school reunion and your friends are like, man, what happened here? Not that kind of what happened here. Not like, hey, you've lost some hair or you've gained weight. That's not the correct what happened here. I'm talking about the, man, you are different. You are kind. You are patient. You are optimistic in the middle of a pandemic. You are hopeful. You are looking towards the future. It's a different type of what happened here. I love this line. There's something about it. It's one of my favorite lines because it could go both ways, right? It could go to the negative of the cry of the oppressed or the people in pain of what happened here. God, what is going on in my life? Why is this happening to me? What is happening here? But it also could go the other way, right? It could go to the cry of the curious of what happened here. This is incredible. Like, you are different. Like, this is an incredible story. Tell me more. Well, what is going on here? And I cannot think of a better picture of the church because I think the church is filled with both of these. I'm not going to hide up here and just say, man, enter the immersed life that we're talking about and everything is going to be okay. That is not what Scripture says. Whenever you heard a sermon, follow Jesus, it's hard. Like, that's what it is. You're going to have moments like this where it's going to be like, man, it is going to be hard. There's going to be suffering. There's going to be, I don't get it. I'm trying to walk in this way, but I'm blinded. I don't know what's happening. I just got to trust in God, and that's not easy. Some of you feel that today, but man, also with this, also you have this of these stories that are coming out of your life that people are curious because you get to experience it. You know what happened, and you get to share with other people this immersed life, but you saying yes to Jesus. There's no better picture. God doesn't call just the healthy. He calls the sick, and so we know it's going to be messy, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be good. It's going to be life-changing. I say that because I also love this line of what happened here because it's literally the question that it's why I'm a Christian today. Now, I'm a Christian because I had an experience, probably like a lot of you, of I know why I came in. I know how I said yes to Jesus. But I'll tell you, I don't continue to say yes to Jesus because of what happened to me 20 years ago. I say yes to Jesus every day because of what God is doing in your guys' life, in my friend's life, and the students that I get to follow or get to lead their lives. I literally have hundreds of stories of life change in my back pocket that I can pull out at any point and say, man, this is why I follow Jesus. And it wasn't my own conversion that keeps me going. That got me in the game. But it is stories like you guys from this church, of you guys sending out people, by you guys having a baptism celebration and people saying yes. It's people in Rhode Island know about Madison Park because I cannot wait to share people, or tell people about what you guys are doing here. Literally, how you guys treat missionaries, how you guys treat me. You guys have written letters, text messages to my wife. Not just me, but to my wife and to my family to show, man, we're here for you, we're praying for you. There are literally missionaries across the world because of what this church and your guys' generosity and the stories coming out of this building. That's what inspires me. It gets me pumped up. I can also know stories like Destiny or Frankie or Jacob and all these people in my life that are in my ministry that have life change. And every time I get to baptize a student, I think, this is why I do what I do. Man, God is more real now than he ever has before. I get to see lived out 1 Peter, these living stones. And we need those stories. We truly need you to tell those stories because those stories aren't just for the people that aren't Christians. Those stories are for us to rally together to say, you're right. I'm in a dark place right now, but you're right. God is still working in people's lives. We need to tell stories and we need to tell good stories because I'll be honest, I think Christians have lost the art of telling a good story. I'll be honest, I think there's life change happening. I know it because I'm seeing it. I'm a product of that because of this church. I know you guys have sent out people. You guys are doing incredible things. But I think when people do ask, man, what happened here? I think we've lost the art of a good story. I tell you this because I hear the same two testimonies always when I hear, you know, why are you a Christian? And these are the stories I hear. The first one is this. They even admit they don't have a good story. They'll say, I don't have a good story. I grew up in the church. My family was a Christian. I, you know, went to church very first Sunday. I haven't missed a church since. I've been there. Never really fell away. You're right. No one's like, man, what happened? In the Bible, when Jesus and when people encounter Jesus, it would be like they were blind, but now they see. And I feel like we're telling stories like, you know what? I was never really blind. You know, I still see. You're right, no one's like, crazy, what happened? We need to have the art of telling a better story. And I'm telling you, you don't have a good story, not because you grew up in church. That's actually probably to your benefit. We literally think, I think most people in here probably grew up in the church, like myself. And I sometimes used to think that I was at a disadvantage because I didn't have some crazy, ridiculous conversion story. And I think that is sad because you should be at an advantage because you know Scripture more. You got to see, you had parents that literally loved you enough to say, this is the most important way to live life. And yet we walk around thinking, oh, I just wish I had a better story. And if that is your story, you're right, that isn't a good story because you need to figure out what happened. Why are you still doing what you're doing? Because your story is not good just not because you grew up in the church. Actually, that should add to your story. Let me give you an example. I have some older students that had that story, grew up in the church. I hope they don't hear this because they were super boring. They're just normal people. Like, they were engineers. I didn't understand anything they said. They were into math, and I was like, that's weird. But they were both engineers, and they both grew up in the church, never fell away. They just had a normal Christian life story that we all know here in the Midwest so often. And I still remember this because I remember challenging them of like, that doesn't have to be your story. And they heard the stat that just under 4,000 languages still don't have the Bible in their language. That 1 in 5 people are still waiting to even get Scripture, let alone hear the message of Jesus. And that hit them. Like, they were cut to the heart for that. And I still remember this because they were like, man, we got to do something. And they end up falling in love, and they end up going and going into Bible translation school in order to go plant ministries and translate the Bible in Southeast Asia. Now, I get to support these two friends of mine that have grown up in this ministry that are now in Southeast Asia with this village. And it's the cool part about this story is that they are not just going in there, they are learning the language, but they're taking tons of data from this language and putting into a computer software program that they made. Now, when you hear them, it's super boring. They're all about codes. Like, I'm writing this computer program, it's all about this code, and like, let me show you the code, and I'm like, I do not care. But as they tell it, as I'm like, this is super boring, it's incredible because when you go to Google on your computer, you can type in, you can translate to tons of different languages, but you can't translate to their language because it doesn't exist on the internet. They're literally taking this language that they're learning and they're going to put into a program that they're writing in order to give this city, this tribe, the internet, pretty much. Think about that. Think about what that does for your economy, what that does for trade, what that does for just resources for them to get business education, for them to be able to trade with different languages and different people across the world. Their economy is going to go from being poor to having opportunities for entrepreneurship and for people to give resources. Talk about life change. These two people, and you may be like, man, these people are probably geniuses from MIT. No, these are the farm boy down the street from your house that just happened to say yes to a story and said, I don't want the story of me just growing up in the church to be my story. I want to say yes to this immersed life. Man, that's inspiring that they're all going to take this technology they're doing, not only to give them business and trade, they're also then going to translate that same technology and use it to translate the Bible to give them spiritual health as well. That sounds a lot like the New Testament. And it comes from these two people that I said are boring, that are life-changing stories because of them saying yes. I love stories like that. If you grew up in the church, that doesn't necessarily have to be your story. Actually, quit telling that story. Tell the story why now you are saying yes, and so they can say, man, what happened here? The other testament I hear so often is... Well, in New England, we get a lot of people coming in. Most of our students are non-Christians. They don't know. They've never been to a church. And so we don't even have a lot of ministries out to the Northeast. And so people from outside the Northeast will bring in these outreach events to our campuses to kind of evangelize our campus. And usually they're done very poorly, I'll be honest, because they share the same testimony. And this is what happens. They bring in students from the outside that'll come in and say, you need to accept Jesus because of this. I was once drinking a lot, and now I don't drink at all. I was sleeping around, but now I don't do that. I used to hang out with the wrong crowd and hang out in bars, and now I go to church. Now, you may be thinking, that's a pretty cool story, and it is. It's a part of the good story. But let me say this. If you follow Jesus now, and now you just don't do a lot of stuff, I think you're missing out on the best part of following Jesus. Following Jesus is not just saying no to things. It's unleashing you to say yes to so much more. It's saying yes to the things that are going to be life-changing to the people around you. You just saying, I don't drink anymore, I'm telling you, for the people that are not Christians, are just going to say, so you just don't have as much fun now, okay? But you could say, I don't just not drink, I actually get to give life to people. I get to restore marriages. I get to be a part of something bigger than myself. That's what it looks like to say yes to Jesus. It says this, saying yes to Jesus is not just saying, I'm going to forgive my friend, but it's forgiving your enemy. It's not just saying, I'm going to give the homeless man my change. It's saying, I'm going to help change your life by investing in who you are. It's not just giving 10% to the church, it's being generous to the point of being uncomfortable. It's not just posting things on Facebook or saying, I care about you, I'm praying for you. It's going to their house and sitting in their pain and saying, I'm here for you. It's not just going to work, but it's being living stones to your coworkers. It's not just adding someone to the table, but it's actually truly living out hospitality weekly in your home. It's not just being nice to your friends, but sitting with the lonely kid at school. It's taking the step, and I love this one. It's not just not making mistakes. It's not just saying no to things. It's saying, I'm going to own my mistakes. When someone at work makes a mistake and it was you, you own it in front of everybody. That was me. That's my bad. That's my fault. Because you're not defined by your failures anymore. God has given you a new identity, and you don't have to be defined by your past or your mistakes. You get something better. You get to own it because your mistakes don't hold you back anymore. That is different. That is weird. It's that type of community that we're going to need. But too often, people think following Jesus is just saying no to something. But it's baptizing not just your Sundays, but your wallet, your time, your energy, your family, your weaknesses, your career. That is weird. And people are going to say, what happened here? Let me give you a couple examples. I just want today to be a time, I just share some stories of what you guys have done in order to impact what's happening in Rhode Island. You may not even know it. By you guys being generous, by you guys giving time, money, energy, by texting us, you guys are making stories happen. Because our stories, our students are having these conversion stories that are ridiculous. One girl is by the name of Frankie. Frankie went on our spring break trip. She was at the end of her college career, was the star captain of the softball team, star captain of the soccer team. She honestly excelled at everything she did. But at the end of her career, she asked that question so many of us do of, you know, is this it? Well, what else is here? At the time, she was friends with a lot of people in our group, and so they invited her to go on a trip. And our spring break trip is awesome because it just, for the first time, sometimes exposes them to a life outside of themselves. They get to look for the first time to a bigger picture. And we go to Mexico and work with survivors of sex trafficking, and she went on this trip with us, and it was like the first time she realized that there were other people that have a need in the world around her. She was a social work major, and on that trip, she encountered Jesus in a real way through her friends, through living stones lived out in front of her. And she gave her life to Jesus. We got to baptize her 2 weeks later. But the cool part of the story is she said when she became a Christian, she used to struggle with what to do with social work. But once she became a Christian, she immediately says, I knew exactly what I was supposed to do. Because God doesn't just change your location. Sometimes he changes your perspective. And for her, it changed how she saw people. And she wants to dedicate her life, not only doing social work with kids, but doing it maybe even in the poorest of countries. Last week, we just sent her. She got fully funded, and she's now going to Nairobi, Kenya, to work in one of the poorest slums in the world in order to do social work, in order to bring healing, not only physically and mentally, but also spiritually to the people there. Guys, she's been a Christian for under a year. And that's her saying, I want in. I want to say yes to this immersed life. That's what it looks like to take these steps. And I'm not saying you have to go to Africa. I kind of hate when people use stories of like going to Southeast Asia or going to Africa. Let me make it very simple for you. It's also just saying yes to the simple things. There's a girl named Destiny. Very first student I ever met in Rhode Island actually wanted to have a conversation about what our group was about. And I got to take her to Duncan, where all the spiritual conversations happen. And we sat there and we talked. And I still remember sharing for the very first time, like, the gospel. She was the very first student I got to do this there. And I was doing it badly, and I was, like, trying to mumble. I was trying to figure out, like, what's the best way to do this? And after an hour of me trying to mumble through this thing, she immediately said yes. And it was one of those moments where I was like, I don't think you understand. Let's backtrack. I must have done it wrong or something, because she was just like, oh, I'm totally in. And she says, I've never heard of this before. Can you imagine people in America never hearing about a simple message of Jesus that so many of us grew up on? She's never heard about it before. It makes a little bit more sense when you look at her life. If you look at her life, she grew up in a really rough home. So for her, she grew up with her mom at first, and so her mom was addicted to drugs, prostitution, and so the state took her away from her mom and gave her to her dad. And life didn't get easier for Destiny. For Destiny, with her dad, she moved around a lot. She went from motel to motel to campground to campground. Eventually, she was homeless, and she skipped school so often to take care of her younger siblings. So for her, college was like this escape. It was a place for her to start over, to kind of get away from the problems of life. And she encountered our group. These hopefully living stones lived out on her campus. And she just asked that question, what happened here? For her, she was primed when I got to share this story that she immediately said, I'm all in. Now, the cool part about this story is that the first year she was a Christian, she won two of her friends to Jesus on our campus. Like, if I just stop the story there, that's incredible. I don't know what you were doing the first year of your Christian, being a Christian. I was not doing that. But she was just so motivated. She was so in love with Jesus. She didn't know it wasn't cool to talk about Jesus yet, so she just shared it with everybody, like everywhere she went. And the crazy part is, after college, she ended up getting plugged into one of our churches that we're connected with. And it's one thing, it's an incredible story, her getting plugged in. She joined the youth group. Her first year there also got to pour into her high school kid that she got to baptize, which is incredible. And if the story stopped there, I'd be like, man, what an incredible story of her saying yes to the immersed life. But she knew she needed to take another step that was hard. Once again, doing that, what happened here, the hard part of she had to deal with the crap in her own life, right? And so she ends up saying, I need to forgive my mom. She didn't know how to do that. She wasn't ready to forgive her mom, who caused so much pain and heartbreak in her life. She wasn't ready. And so week in, week out, she tried to figure out what she was going to do to forgive her mom. And she simply said she just started just asking her to go to church. That's it. That's all she could muster up to do, just asked her to go to church with her. Week in, week out, she'd ask her, hey, why don't you join me for church? Why don't you join for me for church? And the crazy part about this story is her mom said that she ended up saying yes to Destiny because she saw a change in who Destiny was. Let me translate that. She says, what happened here? There's a change in her life, and I want to know what it is. And so she came to Church of Destiny for the very first time. And what I think is cool about this, she didn't have the power yet to forgive her mom. She wasn't ready. She took a small stone in this step of saying, I'm just going to be present with my mom week in, week out at church. I'm not going to be able to talk much. I'm not going to be able to explain anything to her yet. I'm just going to be present every single week. For months, she sat with her mom in the back and just didn't ask questions, but just kept inviting her. This past year, Destiny got to baptize her mom, the one person in her life that probably caused her the most pain, the person that was the most far away from this life that is truly life, and Destiny got to be a part of bringing in, life into her mother. They both attend a church weekly now at Bridgepoint Christian Church, and that's what it means to say yes to what Jesus is calling you to do. What happened here? What is your story? Let me just end with this. I love the story of, I love hiking. I don't know if you guys love hiking. Out in the Northeast, it's one of my favorite things to do. There's a mountain called Mount Washington. It's the highest peak in New England. It's also weird because it's not even that high compared to like the Rockies, but honestly, it's the second highest wind speed in the world. This place is crazy windy. It's crazy cold. It's crazy dangerous. Every year people die on this trip because the weather conditions change so quickly up there. And on the way up this mountain, there's markings on the trees that guide your way up to this trail. Now, after you get above tree line, it gets too thin. There's no trees, so you can't put markings on trees anymore. So they do it on the stones for a while as you walk. But eventually, as you get high enough, they have to start building these rock walls or these rock stacks in order to point the way up the mountain. You'll see a picture of it right here. As you get up there, they have to stack because the snow gets too heavy, the wind is too brutal, and it's too foggy that you can't see much. And so these big stack of rocks guide you to your destination. And you see the next picture, there's many of them. I mean, there's probably hundreds of them all the way up this mountain. And this is what I love, is that when you're lost, when you're wandering up there, when you can't see, the fog is too dense, when the weather comes in and you're freaking out, it's going to be these cairns, these rock stacks, they're going to guide you to the top of the mountain. And I can't help but think about living stones as I think about that. This is what it looks like to be a living stone. It's not going to be a building that's going to point people to Jesus. It's going to be a group of people like us, living stones gathered together that's going to point someone to the way. And it's not just going to be us. It's going to be thousands of communities across the country, right? It's going to be you guys. It's going to be the small groups in your homes. It's going to be Rhode Island and our ministry that you guys have poured into. It's going to be the church down the street in Madison Park and Quincy as well, joining together. It's all of us being Karens, showing the way of what it looks like to live the best life possible. Guys, we don't need you if we're just going to survive. You're right. If we're just going to exist as a church here, not really grow, not make an impact, you're right. We don't need to share your stories. But if we're going to be on mission, if we want to move the mission forward, if we want to change Quincy, we're going to need every single person telling their story of what happened here. Guys, this is too important. Because what I love about this is that us sharing our stories inspire us to keep going. That's what it looks like. We need each other in order to keep going. Us sharing our stories isn't just for the non-Christians. It's for us to say, man, I needed that in this dark time to keep going. Guys, we need to share better stories of what God is doing in our life. Let me give you three challenges. Maybe you're a person here today that you're wandering. Maybe you're interested in this immersed life because you need hope in this hopeless world around you. Man, we want to be there for you. We want to be a living stone that points you to the living stone. Man, you can do that right on the mobile app. You can do that at the table outside. We want to help you make that decision. Maybe it's just baptism. I want to get baptized because that's the next step for me saying yes. Maybe you are a living stone, but you're not doing it in community. Guys, we're going to need each other. You can't do this by yourself. We need a community of people gathered together. Maybe you need to join one of our small groups. You can do that also at the table. Say, I want into a community that's going to make a difference. Or maybe you realize that you don't have a story where people are asking you what happened here. Maybe you just simply need to take a risk. Maybe you need to start saying yes. Maybe you need to ask this prayer or say this prayer, God, interrupt my life because I want in. Maybe you just need to take this next step right now because we're going to stand and we're going to sing. And maybe your next step is just to simply celebrate the stories coming out of this church as we stand and as we sing and as we be a part of the stories and the baptisms that have happened. And we get to see firsthand 1 Peter being lived out right now.